case of the day is United States against McHugh. Mr. Kokkinakos.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Chris Peter Kokkinakos on behalf of the appellant, Thomas McHugh. Your Honor, the bench, the case below was a criminal prosecution in the United States District Court for the Western District of Wisconsin. Initially, our issue was whether an oral sentence prevails over a conflicting written sentencing order. Now, the Court has changed our issue. Our new issue is, did the District Court...
Well, that is a new issue. Let me tell you, it's obviously not apparent that either of you appreciates that there is an issue underlying that issue. The question is whether any of this is within the scope of a court's power under Article 3 of the Constitution. Hayburn's case and the letter of the justices, really old, right, more than 200 years old, say that a federal court has no power to make recommendations to the executive branch. That's outside the scope of a judge's authority under Article 3. What the parties are debating in this case is a recommendation to the executive branch. And I take it that there's a problem, first, in making such recommendations. Hayburn's case says there's no power to do it. But if a district judge makes a recommendation to the executive branch in excess of his authority under Article 3, how can we change the recommendation? We're an Article 3 court. How can Judge Crabb change the recommendation? Right? I don't understand how, given Hayburn's case, this could have been made in the first place. But given that it was made, where is the authority to amend the recommendation?
From this court or the district court, Your Honor?
Any court, any Article 3 court. If it is not within the power of an Article 3 court to make a recommendation to the executive branch, and that's the holding of Hayburn's case, how is it within the power of an Article 3 court to change a recommendation to the executive branch?
Your Honor, I agree. I agree with that, and I would ask for leave to post-argument to file a legal memorandum on that particular topic. And in this case, Your Honor...
We'll be happy to receive memos from the parties within 10 days addressing the question whether this recommendation was either proper under Article 3 or having been made changeable by Judge Crabb or by this court, consistent with Article 3 of the Constitution.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, we find in United States versus Queen, 847 F. 2nd, 346, a Seventh Circuit case decided in 1998, as well as United States versus McGee, 981 F. 2nd, 271, another Seventh Circuit case out of 1992, that once a notice of appeal is filed, jurisdiction is clearly conferred on the Court of Appeals, and the district court's power to proceed further is suspended. United States v. Viteto, 945 F. 2nd, 163, another Seventh Circuit Court case decided in 1991. An exception, Your Honor, an exception to this principle is offered by federal Rule 36 of the Federal Rules of...
36 has nothing to do with appellate jurisdiction. Right?
Okay, Your Honor.
Rule 36 is an exception to the 7-day time limit in Rule 35C. Says district judges can't make any changes outside of 7 days unless the Court of Appeals, etc. Rule 36 is an exception to that time limit. Now, the question of appellate jurisdiction, assuming that this is a real judgment, that there is any Article 3 case or controversy here, the question of appellate jurisdiction is whether the district court can change something that is already before the Court of Appeals on appeal. Cases like Queen deal with defendant has appealed issue A and the district court fixes issue B. What we have here, assuming we've got an appellate jurisdiction problem, is defendant appeals issue A. While the case is before the Court of Appeals, district judge enters an order with respect to issue A. Right? That's Griggs against Provident Consumer Discount Company, which says that the core of the doctrine is that the district court cannot change an order that is before the Court of Appeals. Right? That's the jurisdictional problem in this case. Neither side seemed to get it.
True enough, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, if this court does find jurisdiction, we would ask that...
Did you, by the way, in your research turned up Queen, did you find any case holding that while an appeal on a particular issue is pending, the district court can change the judgment on that issue, on the very thing that is before the Court of Appeals?
Your Honor, I did not.
Now, I've searched, couldn't find any such case.
Is this drug treatment issue part of the sentence?
Therein lies the conflict. The oral pronouncement from the bench included that my client, Mr. McHugh, could attend a substance abuse treatment program. When the written judgment and commitment order was issued, it included the same language and added that he cannot receive an early release or any credit.
The judge couldn't restrict the Bureau of Prisons from giving that credit if the director decides to give him that credit.
I absolutely agree. But
isn't the sentence really the amount of imprisonment, the fine, the supervised release terms, special assessment?
Well,
doesn't that complete the sentence?
Things other than recommendations,
right.
In other words.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
And so everything else is pretty much precatory language by the judge.
The Bureau of Prison, they're the ones that make the decision if they have room and where to put someone in the substance abuse program.
Or in what institution, or whether they are eligible for the inmate financial assistance participation, and so on and so forth.
But for the district court judge to limit, to allow him into the program.
No, it's not limiting. That's the point of my colleague. It's a recommendation. The Bureau of Prison can do what it wants. Suppose the judgment form in a criminal case were reorganized, and there were Section A, judgment, that is, all those things, the number of months, the restitution, and so on, in which the judge is actually making an order. And then Rec B says, obiter dicta, right? And then in a section under obiter dicta, it says, the judge recommends that the defendant go to the prison in Oxford, Wisconsin, that he have a drug rehabilitation program, and that he be kind to his mother, right? All things that are unenforceable.
Absolutely.
Right? And I would take it that you would agree we could review everything under Section A of this document, the actual judgment, but we couldn't review the instruction that the judge recommends that he be kind to his mother.
True enough, Your Honor.
Well,
but in this situation, when you limit Mr.
You just appealed a recommendation that he be kind to his mother.
See, you're afraid the BOP is going to listen to these recommendations, and some district court judges complain bitterly that the BOP, in fact, pays no attention whatsoever to
Well, I'm just that. Trying to, and I agree, Your Honor, but the limiting language, the BOP, that's our concern. So for Mr. McHugh not
but
to...
Since it's a recommendation, it doesn't limit anything. But if the judge says... I recommend that the prisoner be sent anywhere except Latuna, Texas, right? Because I think that's a terrible prison, right? Could you appeal and say, we think, and so on, right? It wouldn't be within our authority to
change
the recommendation pro or con prison in Latuna, Texas.
But the BOP does follow recommendations in 85% to 90% of the cases, and by limiting the judgment and commitment order language, it could ultimately change the sentence Mr. McHugh received. If there are any more questions, I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Yarish.
If you may please the court.
As you see, there are a few jurisdictional problems in this case.
Well, certainly, and I think as a practical matter, that may be an issue that we've missed. I think in the original position of the government,
U.S. Attorney's offices don't have copies of Haburn's case?
I certainly do, Your Honor, but I think that that was the original position
of the
government.
When I was in the Solicitor General's office, I didn't, by the way. My set of the U.S. reports went back only to 1937. We were not supposed to go back to the Four Horsemen before the New Deal.
And when I joined this court, they were only going to give me from 400 forward, but I insisted that they find a complete set, which
that's
I now
right.
have.
I insisted, too. So my set of the U.S. reports back in chambers has got Haburn's case in it.
I think in the government's original position was that there was no jurisdiction to appeal, or this court had no jurisdiction to hear an appeal from a non-binding sentencing recommendation. I think as a practical matter, the district courts, upon request of the defendant, since I've been practicing, the defendants ask numerous things. Could the defendant please be placed in a facility near his family?
Could I ask, though, if we
Certainly.
Have no jurisdiction, in your view, over this appeal because it's just a recommendation, would we have jurisdiction to tell the district court that it didn't have jurisdiction to make recommendations?
Well, I
or
mean,
to
that's,
change them while they're on appeal.
Right.
And I think that, that therein lies the conundrum, because the problem is that we shouldn't be here in the very first instance. What happened, though, is that the district court, upon the defendant's own motion, in his pro per capacity, and sort of an odd hybrid, filed this. The court then acted upon it under the notion that, well, there is this...
You're talking about the correction now.
The correction,
yeah.
Correct. That there is this difference between what the judge orally stated and what appears in the written record. I think the court was trying to exercise some sort of judicial economy in the sense
of
saying...
There's a potential error if there's a difference, only if it's part of the judgment. Right.
Well,
suppose the judge says in open court, I sentence you to 480 months in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons, and then the written judgment says anywhere but Latuna. Right. I recommend that you don't send him to Latuna. Could that judgment be corrected on the ground that it contains a recommendation, which is outside the Article III power, that he didn't say in open court?
Well, no, and that is why the government's original position was, no, there is no jurisdiction to hear any of the alleged errors, because they're simply non-binding recommendations, things that the court says in pronouncing a sentence. And that's why our original position was, and correctly stated, is that there's no jurisdiction.
The problem is that the district court's correction treated this as if it were a judgment, right? If the judge had said in open court, 480 months with possibility of, go back before the Sentencing Reform Act, 480 months with possibility of parole under 2508D, right, which means immediate eligibility for parole. And the written judgment had omitted that clause or said with normal possibility of parole, I assume that could easily be corrected.
Right.
But if the written judgment just adds a recommendation, and that's not part of the judgment, right? There's a different way of putting it. Rule 36 allows a district court to correct clerical errors in its judgments, but if this isn't part of the judgment, it's kind of like using Rule 36 to correct the transcript.
No, and I agree. It's building sandcastles in the air. In other words, the first instance there was no real basis for
the
recommendation.
On the question of appellate jurisdiction, did you say anything to Judge Crabb before she entered this order?
Your Honor, actually, I'm not the counsel below, but the answer is no, because what typically happens...
The paper that came here I found shocking, because McHugh filed the application for this change, did not inform Judge Crabb that the very issue was on appeal, and Judge Crabb then enters something without finding out that it's on appeal, without getting the response of the United States, without finding out whether it was a clerical error or something that had been done deliberately by Judge Shabazz. And, of course, it was shocking in a way that the paper was even received. Since McHugh was a represented defendant, the district court shouldn't be receiving papers from represented, pro se papers from represented parties.
Right. And, Your Honor, just so the court's aware, during a pending appeal, it's not unusual for defendants to file pro per motions, what the typical procedure is in the Western District.
And you would expect the Western District or any court to notice that an appeal is pending.
Right, and typically what happens is the magistrate judge gets it in the first instance, issues a ruling. I can't say that I've ever been required to respond to such motions, issuing the ruling saying you've already represented my counsel, we don't recognize hybrid representation, we're going to disallow it. And then the second point is that they then go on to whatever point they're going to make, and in this case would have would have issued it and said, you know, it's up on appeal or whatever the proper ruling would have been. And that wasn't done. So the point was that although there was no response from the government before the issue was ruled, that really wasn't out of the ordinary concerning the practice of the district. There are no further questions. I have nothing more to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, counsel? Bet you didn't think you were in for all of this when you showed up, did you?
Actually, when we were chosen as the sixth oral argument of the morning, we had an idea that the court might have some questions for us. Just briefly, Your Honor, in regards of the of the memorandum, I have 10 days to write that,
mm-hmm.
and the order will dictate the issues.
Well, we may or may not ultimately issue an order, but we invite both parties to file supplemental memorandum within 10 days addressing the question whether either the district court or this court has authority under Article 3 of the Constitution to make recommendations to the Bureau of Prisons, and having made such a recommendation, to amend it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.